Hello, everyone. Oh, good, this thing is on. So it's four in the dot, and I have lots of code and slides to get through. Last time I did this in a dry run, it took about 2.5 hours. So, just kidding, it's only about an hour, but there's a lot of content I want to share with you guys. So everyone, welcome to Windows Phone 8 XAML App Development. I'm Sean Oster. I see a few familiar faces out there, but for those that don't know me, I'm a senior program manager on the Windows Phone Development Platform team. Basically, I just make sure that you guys can make amazing apps. I've been focusing on controls mostly for the last year, but controls, project templates, anything that makes your lives easier. Even before that, I helped bring over the original Silverlight over to Windows Phone in the 7 timeframe. So I've been at Phone pretty much since it's gone from mobile to phone. And before that, I was actually on the Windows Phone Toolkit. I see a few old toolkitters in here, so hello, David, hello, Justin. So say hi to you guys. So let's get started. So four big blocks, an overview. For those that might not know what XAML is, we're going to talk a little bit about that, but not too much. Then the fun of the talk is actually building Windows Phone 8 apps. Then we'll get to the fun part of, so what about my Windows Phone 7 app? How does that work? What about that code? How do I manage that? We're going to touch briefly on that. There's a great talk later in the week on really how to manage it with multiple projects and everything. And of course, the most fun is the Q&A. So, overview. So what is XAML? Now, who here is already a XAML developer in one shape or the other? Nice. About half the room, maybe 63%, be accurate there. So XAML is an extensible application markup language. What does that really mean? It's a declarative markup-based language to define your user experience. You basically say, use some angle brackets to place UI elements that define the UI of your application. It's as simple as that. It's very similar to HTML. If you don't already know XAML, just think of it as sort of a more concise version of HTML with more stringent rules. It's also the way to write apps for Windows Phone 8. I've heard a lot of questions, a lot of rumors. They're like, oh, do we write some new Windows runtime app? Do I have to throw away all my old code? What happened to Silverlight? The same way you wrote apps in Windows Phone 7 is the same way you write apps in Windows Phone 8. Unless, of course, you're writing a game and you want to take advantage of the great Direct 3D improvements we made. But otherwise, you're still writing XAML and manage code. And of course, it aligns with Windows 8. This is a huge process. You've heard that we've ripped out the kernel and swapped in the new Windows kernel. We've been changing out the core CLR. This is all part of alignment. So XAML aligns along with every other technology. We're trying to make sure you have one code base to code on top of. And this is the first step, obviously, towards that. So where do we sit in the stack? There's a XAML app. It's a peer of a Direct3D app, which, of course, works with C++. It enables great frameworks like Unity and Havoc and be able to write games like that. But on the XAML side, it's still managed code, C# or VB. And of course, that can use Windows Runtime components. There's a talk that Peter Tor is going to give that talks about how to actually consume these. So if you have existing C++ sitting around, some fast math, a bunch of old socket code or new socket code, or this tiny database thing I've heard called SQLite that's in C++, you know, things like that, you can wrap them and use them within your XAML app. Of course, you can also interop into Direct3D. We're not really going to talk about that, but you can pretty much carve up a big hole in your XAML surface and render Direct3D into that. And of course, XAML apps can use all the great APIs on the phone. See, that wasn't too painful for an overview. Now for the actual fun stuff. So we're going to talk about building Windows Phone 8 apps using these new features. We're going to start really broad and talk about some of the project infrastructure changes we've made. These are actually changes to the project templates themselves that get you up off the ground and coding great apps faster. Then we're going to move down sort of a middle tier and talk about the building blocks, pretty much the controls, you know, my bread and butter, and really what you spend a lot of time doing in XAML is actually controls and animation. And then from there, we're going to go one layer lower and show you some .NET framework keywords and different paradigms that we can use to make great apps and make them much faster. So project infrastructure and design. So the first thing I want to talk about is project templates. If you do file new on the SDK, you'll see a few new templates in there. You'll see a XAML and Direct3D app. You'll also see an HTML5 app right off the bat. That helps reinforce the fact that, yes, you can make great HTML5 style apps, you know, right from the get-go, whether they're based on, say, a PhoneGap solution or jQuery Mobile or something you've rolled your own. There's a lot of great ways to incorporate HTML5 content into your application. Again, also, you can make these XAML and Direct3D apps as well. And inside of existing project templates that you may have already known and love, there's more little goodies that we've hid in there. And I'm going to give you a little tour of how those work. One of the big goodies is localization. We've taken some of our common MSDN guidance on localization and injected that into the project template. It's very lightweight. It's not this deeply rooted system that's going to interfere with your application. If you don't like the way it's done or you have your own in-house version, you can quickly remove it and replace it with your own. But if you want a good, solid guidance on how to do internationalization and localization, we have it built in the project templates. Localization is super important, and I want to talk about it right at the beginning, because as developers, you should be thinking about it right at the beginning. Now that we're taking our apps and moving to multiple locations and multiple markets and different cultures, it really helps if you think about localization from the beginning, if you start using resource strings from the beginning, because no one likes to go back to their code and rip out every little string and replace it. So it's definitely suggested you do it right from the beginning. And besides just actually the strings themselves, you want to think about the actual UI itself. An English layout lays out left to right, but if you're, say, writing an Arabic app, that needs to lay out from right to left. Now, there's a property called flow direction that controls the UI mirroring. It determines how the control actually, the entire UI lays out. It's been there since WPF, it was in Silverlight, it was also there actually in 7.5, but it wasn't fully supported. And if you reported a bug and said, hey, sorry, my panorama is going off in some weird way, we'll sort of shrug our shoulders and say, sorry, not supported, which is rather frustrating. But now it's fully supported in Windows Phone 8, so your apps can go every place the phone does. Not only do we support full right-to-left text, we also support bi-di or bi-directional text. So if you have one long string of text that contains both left-to-right content and right-to-left content, it will render correctly using the right direction, which is super important if you want your users to actually believe that your app has been localized for their language. Another thing for people out there that are really particular about their pixels, which I am, I'm the type of guy who actually take a screenshot of my app and overlay it onto a piece of first-party UI, and I go, huh, these pixels seem to be off. I'm using the exact same font, exact same font weight, and it still doesn't line up. That's because the Windows Phone 7 tech stack uses a completely different custom text rendering engine. Your Windows Phone 8 apps, on their hand, will use DirectWrite or DWrite to actually render the text. Part of bringing that over is we also added a new property to text called character spacing. So you can now adjust the spacing between your characters. That helps you get pixel-perfect UI to match with the first-party experience. So not only are we going to multiple cultures and multiple locales, we're also going to multiple devices, which is awesome. For you as developers, now you have to worry about all these three resolutions, all the assets, how you're going to lay it out. You have to create three different layouts. That's actually a lie. I'm just kidding. You don't have to do that. You can still only design. You still only have to design your app for one form factor, and that's a logical form factor of 480 by 800. Devices are described in terms of their physical pixels, but we've kept it very simple, and you still do all your layout just in a logical space of 480 by 800. We take care of downscaling, upscaling your images and your assets and the fonts to make sure everything looks clear and crisp. One thing you do have to think about, though, is the resolution of your actual images. So if you take an image that's, say, 50 pixels on a WVJ device, and you take it to a WXJ device, it's going to stretch those 50 pixels to fit into that space. You're going to lose some fidelity. I have another slide that makes it a little bit more clear. And now that we're shipping higher res assets in our applications, now we're consuming more memory. And I want to show you a little trick a little bit later on how to actually help consume and conserve your memory. Well, not to help you consume it. You can do that all on your own. I'll help you conserve it. So how does this actually work in real life? So imagine you have this little snippet of XAML here. It's just, you know, text block, a border, and an image. These are three basic resolutions. As you, So the first thing is we have an image, and we've defined it to have a width of 400 pixels. Well, everything you see in XAML is 400 logical pixels. And to avoid the question, you can only address logical pixels, not the physical. You can't get to the actual individual pixel using XAML on the device. So if you specify an image to be 400 wide in XAML, it's actually going to render it 400 logical wide. WVGA, it's going to be 400 pixels. WXGA, you're going to see it's going to be 640 pixels, physical pixels. It's going to stretch it. This is why providing high-res assets becomes super important. Now, next question we often get is, what about very small values? Well, the truth is we round them up. So as you can see, WXGA is actually a scale factor of 1.6 from our logical base, which means if you have a border and you say it's 2 pixels, you want to know what is it going to do when it goes onto a WXGA device. Is it going to get thicker or thinner? We round up in almost every case. There are a few optimized cases in the code where we say, hey, we know this is going to render sort of weird, so we'll hand-tune it. But for the most part, small pixel values will get rounded up. Next up is text. Text you don't have to worry about at all. You just specify the size you want as it looks good and logical. And then based on the device we're running on, we actually render at the highest resolution and then downscale the font to that device. We do this both for Windows Phone 8 and Windows Phone 7 apps running on 8. Now, this is super important because you don't want your text to look really blurry on your Windows Phone 7 apps. So the thing to take away is think about your layout and WVGA. Everything is 480 by 800. And then think about when you go to drop in your assets, your app bar icons, your media content. Think about that in the highest resolution in the WXGA. Now to actually some code. So for those, has anyone had a chance to actually install the SDK and play with it? Not very many, so this will be sort of new to some of you guys. There's only 5 or 6. And of course, the shy ones. File new project. As you can see here, we have our XAML and our Direct3D. Here we have an HTML, nice little HTML5 logo we dropped in there. Let's take a simple project template that a lot of you have probably seen before. As you can see, you can target both 7.1 and 8.0 apps. So you can still open up your 7.1 projects in the latest version of Visual Studio. And one of the first things you notice after it finally loads up is, scroll down, this looks pretty standard, until you get to this massive block of comment text. Hopefully everyone can see that right there. So all this is talking about all the localization changes we made in the template. So for everyone that doesn't watch this video and wants to know why this is in here, we explain it. The thing to take away from all this is this line right here. So we'll grab this, copy it, and just replace that. As simple as that, we're now using a resource string. Now I'll sort of break this down for you and explain what's going on here. So we can hide this, give us some more room. So here we are, we've bound our text element, our text property, to this source called localized strings. Where does localized strings come from? Pop open our app.xaml. And you can see we've defined an object here, localized strings, with the key of called localized strings. Well, what does that happen to be? We'll expand that out to this class here. Localized strings exposes a property called localized resources. Where does that go? Well, that happens to go up into the resources folder. When you say file new and add a new resource to your project, this creates a new resx, a new resource file. And then the tools automatically generate this class down here. As you can see, the big warning says, don't touch it, we got this, move along. The important thing to worry about or to notice is the actual resource file itself. And this is a classic, you know, string table here. You have all your strings and their values and a description of what they are. But the two things to really point out here are the fact that we have these resource language and resource flow direction. These are just conventions. They're arbitrary things that we put in there, but we sort of came up with this as being a really solid way of doing incorporating flow direction and language font fallback directly in the resource file itself. So resource language is the actual culture code, language code of the language that the resource file represents, in this case, English. And then flow direction is either left to right or right to left. And these come in handy when you actually come over here to Solution Explorer again. And one of the other things that we've added to the project template is a new initialization method here called initialize language. Pop that open. Again, lots of comments so no one's confused about what's going on. A nice link to an MSDN article explaining what's going on. But there's not much going on once you understand it. We read the resource language from the resource file, and we set it on the root frame. For those that don't know or need a refresher, the root frame is actually what all your pages sit inside of. So as you're navigating your application throughout, you know, its life cycle, it's always sitting in a frame, and everything, all the properties inherit down. So just by setting the language on the frame, everything underneath it gets it. This is super important when you're doing things like font fallback. If you're on a language that doesn't happen to have a certain Unicode character, say English, for example, and it's just no Latin character set, but someone hands you a Unicode character that English or has no analogous for. So it goes through this pinball machine of fallbacks, comparing values and cultures, and it says, hey, I have a value, where should I put it? What font should I use? Well, it's going to use the first one that's been defined in that file. So if you have a language, if two languages that have the exact same Unicode character, you're going to get the very first one that's defined in the file. And if you happen to be someone that speaks the other language that's underneath it, you're going to be sort of upset that it's not rendering in your language. So by setting the language property to the actual language you're rendering and running for, it ensures that the right font is actually used in your application. The next one that's important is the flow direction. As I explained earlier, that controls UI mirroring, and this just simply sets left to right or right to left. So that's the big localization speech that I'm trying to really impart into you guys. Something a little more fun from a design perspective is we're going to come over here to the main page, and let's get rid of all of this XAML, as pretty as it is. Oh, including this as well. And let's just throw in a text block. Some text. Everyone still awake? And so we throw that in there. It's like, oh, good, ship it. It's a beautiful app. Not really. One of the things that makes the Windows Phone UI language so beautiful and powerful is its simplicity. The problem with simplicity is it's often very easy to sort of get wrong. And you're like, how do I make this look right? What, something doesn't feel quite right. Is this aligned? Is it not? So we've shipped this alignment grid. You've seen it on various blogs out there. Various design sessions talk about this. We've just baked it directly into the project templates. So I uncomment this thing at the very bottom. And now you have this grid. This is, anyone that knows design, and knows that using a grid for layout is a very powerful technique to create very consistent-looking UIs. This is the exact same grid that our design studio uses when they're creating new pages and new layouts. The first thing that sort of pops out, if we zoom in here, zooming in actually requires actually zooming in, is that hopefully you can see that the text overhangs out of this red area. That should be a warning sign that something isn't aligned correctly. And it's amazing the number of apps I actually see in the store that don't think about this very tiny thing. It's a very easy thing usually to see. You want to make sure that all your text is left aligned and nothing eats into this about 24-pixel border. But before, it was sort of tribal knowledge, or you had to read a bunch of design docs to know this. Turn on the grid, see what's not aligning, and go, oh, something's hanging over into this edge. A quick way to fix that is actually I'm going to open this up in Blend. And not because I need to, but just because this one part I'm about to do is much easier in Blend, which is I select my text, right-click, say Edit Style, Apply Resource. And these are all the styles for text that we ship by default in Windows Phone. A lot of people don't know about this, and they end up going and searching and trying to finding it themselves. But these are all the different styles that define all the different elements. I just want the normal one. And as you can see, whoa, you can really see. it's now aligned. Now, I'm zoomed in at 300%, so things are going to be off a little bit. But you can get the feeling that it's now left aligned with every other piece of text. So that's another little thing we've baked into all the project templates. Another thing to notice is that image, once you go to ship, you're probably wanting to delete it. So we have another convention is we've moved all the image assets into an assets folder. So if you're looking for the app bar icons, your application icon, things of that nature, they've all been moved into an assets folder. Here's that alignment grid I was talking about. If you're doing any live tile work, here's where all your tiles will end up going. The only thing that's not in here is the splash screen. Here's another little pro tip for people that are, you know, writing apps. The default project templates no longer have a default splash screen. One, people were shipping with the default splash screen, which is, looks sort of strange, this big gray splash screen. And two, apps start up much faster in Windows Phone 8. We do binary XAML, so we actually take your XAML in your application, convert it to a binary format, so it's much faster to load. We've moved some things to later in the startup cycle. So apps that used to take a second and a half, now start up well underneath a second. What we realized is that when these apps are starting up, the splash screen comes in and comes out, and it actually creates a worse visual experience for the user. So it's better to actually not have a splash screen if your app starts up and say 700 milliseconds or less. In that case, just get rid of the splash screen. And if you want to have a splash screen that actually sits there for a full second, you can always create a start page, you know, a normal XAML page that it lands on and just sits there so that your branding can get really burned into their eyes. But I know there's some marketing people in here, so they're like, yes, we need that. But yeah, our usability studies determined that really anything that doesn't settle for, you know, at least a second is almost distracting to the user. It's seen as almost a flicker or a defect in the app. So we said, you know what? Everyone in here's app is going to be awesome and fast, so get rid of the splash screen. Sorry, marketing guys. So those are a few tweaks we've made. Another thing, I was talking about memory. Let's show you how what you can do to fix your memory. So here's a sample app that we're going to play with for the rest of the day. And one of the things I want to show you is, let's actually just run the app. And the tools for those that haven't installed it include emulators for all the different resolutions. So one thing I forgot to mention was please test your app in all the different resolutions. As good of a job as we've done, there will be times you might have to tweak things one way or the other. So decoding pixels. So one thing to know is that, say you have an image that's coming from a source you don't control. You're creating an app that does a music viewer. You're pulling in high-res album art. You don't control the back end. You can't specify a certain size. When that image comes down, regardless of how the width or the height you set on the image, it's going to decode into memory at full resolution. So if you pull down, say, a 2-meg file, which this background image is, it's going to take up all the memory needed to hold a 2-meg image in memory. So this is the magical button. Anyone want to guess how much memory this is using right now?
Less than 2 meg.
Less than 2 meg. That's, get that man a t-shirt. Because he's going to be very surprised. And we can all know the guy that's very surprised. If you look in the upper left-hand corner, it's actually 66 megs right now, 65. So this very simple app I just started with this image in here, 65 megs of memory are being consumed. That's not so good for memory-constrained devices. So one way to fix that, if you know that your image will never need to be bigger, you know, say you're not doing an image zoomer type of application, if it never needs to get any bigger, you can tell the application how big to decode down to. This is a feature that's in WPF, if anyone's familiar with that, so it shouldn't be too big of a surprise, but it's really convenient. So we'll go into our XAML. Here's our basic image. Now the decode pixel properties are actually on bitmap image, not on image. So you have to do a little bit of XAML hackery. Say image source. The image source is going to be a bitmap image. And we want it to be 480 because we know it's never going to get bigger. It's just a background for a page that's always going to be in portrait. And now we need to set the source to point to the same location. Well, that's not going to work. close that out. You can see over in the preview, the image pops back in. All right, exact same picture, looks exactly the same. It'll look the same in all resolutions. Who wants to guess what the new number is from 66? Anyone? 65. Nice. Hopefully we can do better than 65. Oh, 21. See how much memory we've saved? Isn't that awesome? So that's 40 megs of memory that we've reclaimed just by decoding to our target size. So two things to take away. If you don't control the backend image, use decode pixel width or decode pixel height to decode it down to the right size. If you do control the backend, deliver it the size only as big as you need. You know, just because it magically works and scales, it's still consuming all the memory of that image. I have a question. So the question was about scaling, and is it scaled properly as an aspect ratio, I'm assuming?
Well, no, I'm assuming that. If I'm at the 1.5 or 1.6 screen scale.
So the question is this scaled correct for the right resolution? And yes, it'll always be scaled for the right resolution. On the terms of aspect ratio, though, a trick is to either only set width or height, because if you set both, it's going to constrain it to those actual dimensions. So if I said decode pixel height here of 800, it's going to squish it into 480 by 800. If I just set the width, it's going to maintain aspect ratio. So those are just some things at the project level that we've done. So now on to the next level, which are the building blocks, basically the controls. So I want to get this right out there. Anyone that's used Windows Phone 7 knows that our advice to you is don't use the progress bar that's inside of the SDK, because it's not very performant, and it'll stutter and jerk and sometimes not appear at all. And it causes everyone to make this face when they use it, which is called the rage face for those that don't know. And he's saying, progress bar, why you no work well? And I've said that many times, and I've seen developers say that. Windows Phone 8, the progress bar now animates off-thread. You can once again use the very progress bar we give you. You can use the controls. Another big improvement is we've taken Panorama, Pivot, and a new control called Long List Selector and moved them into ROM. Why do you care? Why is this interesting? First is there's now not a separate assembly that has Panorama and Pivot being bundled in your Zap. It's actually on the phone by default. Two, bringing it into ROM allowed us to actually do some fiddling in the back end of these controls. We could rip out some code. We could integrate it deeper into the actual runtime itself. And what did that actually get for you guys? Reduced Panorama memory usage. The theme you'll be seeing is that we've improved a lot of performance issues with scrolling and smoothness. The next big hurdle for people to manage is memory, to make sure your memory is always in check. This graph is actually real data, real values, using the toolkit charting control to chart the values. The big mango-ish color, depending on how colorblind you are, bar is actual usage of a typical panorama with a background image with, say, 3 to 4 items. As you can see, it's about 33 megs for system memory. For video memory, it's about 12 megs. If we move over to Windows Phone 8, which is the blue bar, you can see we've almost gotten to a 50% reduction in system memory usage, down to 20 megs. And for video memory, it's down to 6 megs, so more than half. So using a panorama no longer just consumes all the power and life and joy out of your applications. You no longer have to do as many tricks and hacks to try to make sure you delay load content to the very last second. Another thing we did on the performance aspect is we've improved what we call our first touch experience. I know a lot of Windows Phone users have sort of trained themselves to wait a heartbeat or two when they go to flick on a panorama or a pivot in a first or a third-party application. It's because they know that if they try to flick too soon, it just won't work at all. It'll stick, and it'll stutter, and it's not very smooth, it's not very performant. Some people don't notice it, and you guys are my favorite because I don't see all the angry tweets. But the other, another contingent that definitely does. And you go to try to move that, and it just sticks there and says, nope, forget it, buddy, I'm not moving anywhere. Whereas in Windows Phone 8, because we could actually integrate it with the off-thread input work we did in the Windows Phone 7.5 timeframe, it's now a much smoother experience. Long list selector. What is this long list selector control I mentioned? It's a control that used to exist in the toolkit. We looked at it. It's super performant. It's very. It can handle huge lists of data. It also brings a lot of the classic Windows Phone UI into your applications. It's much better than Listbox, so much so that we've actually hidden Listbox from you. It's still there, but if you go looking for Listbox in the toolbox, you won't find it. And that was by design. It's not a bug, because we believe that much in long list selector. All the default templates now use a long list selector versus Listbox. So what does that actually give you? It gives you support for a jump list. Now, that was in Toolkit, but we've refined some things. So now when you have grouping and you tap on a header, you can get this beautiful jump list that looks just like the default first-party experiences. We've built in a grid view, which wasn't there before. So now if you're creating a photo hub type of experience, if anyone here has ever tried that, you use a combination of wrap panels or funky grids with four columns, or you write your own custom control, and it's sort of annoying. And then you try to integrate it with grouping. It's usually some messy code. So now it's just a matter of setting two properties, and you have a grid view. And sticky headers. Who here has been missing sticky headers? There's a few people. Thank you, guys. This was a big feature for us, because getting proper sticky header support, where when you flick on a list and these little blue boxes actually stick to the top in a very fluid way, and also sort of magnetic. So as you push up against them, they'll move, and then they'll go off screen. And when you drag them back down, they'll sort of follow and chase after it. It's surprisingly difficult to do just in managed code. Are any control vendors here today? I'm sure anyone who's tried is like, why does this not work as well? So that's all wonderful and good. Those are pictures. Let's look at some code. So we're done with this particular thing here. Oh, one thing to get, sort of a pro tip. When you close the application, when you back all the way out, Visual Studio is still going to be running. You're going to be closing, shutting down the process manually from here on out. That allows you to test like sort of rehydration scenarios and fast app switching scenarios. Just something to be aware of, because a lot of people go, why can't I edit my code? Your app is still running even when you've backed out of it. So let's go over here. Let's go to the long list selector view. So actually, let me show you how this app looks. See, I shouldn't have closed the app. It knew I'd need it again. Give you an idea of what we want to do, which is stare at this error message. No, no one wants to do that. Long list selector. So we have a classic sort of app. We're recreating the contact hub. We have a bunch of people, but that's sort of unwieldy and hard to find, so we want to add some grouping to that. We have some random pictures. This is Seattle after a snowstorm, by the way, if you're curious. But that's not a very convenient way to look at it, and I'm really too lazy to write all the code to make it wrap correctly. And here's a nice feed, you know, of things that are happening out in the world. But I get to the very end here, and Elmo Roberts posted another picture of the cat. It's awesome, but where's the first picture? Wouldn't it be nice if it infinitely loaded and pulled in more data? We'll also show you how to do that with long list selector easily, without having to do weird hacks like reaching into the visual tree and hook up to scroll bars, which was clever but painful. All right, so the first thing is, let's go down here. So the first thing is how to convert a list box to a long list selector. So from a list box to a long list selector, and we're done. We've now converted it. Ship it. So it is really that easy just to continue using long list selector as a list box. But we wouldn't have spent months and months making this control so great if that's all you did. And it really was months and months. So one of the first things we need to do is actually apply some styles. Everything is stylable about this control, including those group headers. They can either be the little alphanumerics you usually see. You can also have full length, date, year, like the photo hub. Those are all groups. An idea I had the other day was you could do like newspaper subheadings, and you could be scrolling through an article, and the subheadings could stick to the top. That's open source. You guys can use it. MSPL license, you're good. So from here, we wanted to say a group header. And I'll fill that in a second. And then, so that defines the actual look and feel of the actual group delineating spots. And then we want to look at the jump list, which you can also define. Those will be hidden up here. We'll grab some styles. So this is a standard group header. It's just a block with some text in it. And then here is the jump list, the list that comes up to let you pick everything. Again, this is just a text with a block. And one thing I want to point out is we have these background converter and foreground converter. If you go to the app list or contact list and you tap on, you know, the group, you'll see some of those are grayed out. It means they're empty. The logic to determine if they're, you know, grayed out or not using the proper system accent colors are actually baked into ROM as well. So if you have to define those at the top as converters, but they're available for your use. So those are defined right up here. So now we have some styles. Team pleat, that's not how you spell that, but that's okay. So we'll go down here. Paste that in. No idea what I called that. Anyone else want IntelliSense for XAML, for static resources? That's how I know the coders in the room, the pain. And let's grab the jump list style. Okay. So because we're actually working with groups, though, and we don't have any inbuilt grouping logic, you have to give us the groups. Now, some people would prefer that we had some default grouping. Other people are, good, get your hands off of my code. I'm grouping it myself. Either way, you have to provide groups. The groups are simply iList of iList. So it's a list that contains a bunch of other lists. The only important thing is these other sub-lists that it contains. Each list, you have to have something to bind to. You have to have something to say, this is the A list, the B list, the C list. We have two sort of helper classes that we wrote, the free to use, write your own. But that's the only thing you really have to do is have something you can bind to in these group headers. So in my view model, I have a thing called grouped people, and I'll show you how to bind to it. The default, by the way, the grouping is not enabled, so make sure you turn that on. And another thing you can do is you can hide empty groups. So at this point, moment of truth. And it's a crash. It's a little bit like NASCAR and hockey. You wait for the demo to actually break. It's sort of exciting. So let's see what style it was that actually wasn't found. A little debugging. Something in here isn't found. But we'll move on. But this will work eventually, trust me. It will. I just don't want to waste too much time. I want to show a bunch of code here. So you have the group header, long list style, jump list. But I think the template's up here with two M's as well. So we have long list selector group header template. And then we have long list selector jump list style. Let's find out. There's one. Oh, thank you, sir. So there's that one. Yeah, I think we got rid of that one. We got one there. Let's try that again. Do you see the one with two M still? Ah. See? Paired programming. If two people are better, imagine a room full of coders staring at you. I just recommend everyone tries it. Ah, thank you guys. Paired programming. All right. So now we have beautiful grouping. You can click on it, jump list support. And you can see items that don't actually have any data in them are correctly grayed out. So what's the magic behind this? Well, let's switch over to Solution Explorer. And we'll look at the view model. As you can see, I've bound to this thing called grouped people. Grouped people returns a list of alpha key groups. An alpha key group takes three parameters. I want to create a bunch of groups, so it takes a list to group. It takes a lambda, or it takes a delegate to know what to group on, because you could group on last name, first name, year. I want to group on name in this particular case. And the last parameter is, should I sort those subgroups? Yeah, you should. So we come over here to create groups. Now, alpha key group isn't shipped in the SDK. There's about 20 different ways you can do this. This is just one way. All this code will be available for everyone to go grab and pilfer and comment and make better. So what does create groups do? Well, it's just an override for a very similar call called create groups. It takes items and then takes the current threading culture. And this is really important because when I go to the actual call down here, is the very first thing it does is create a sorted locale grouping. One question that we always get is, hey, when I look at the jump list in first-party apps, I can see a bunch of different characters. There's a certain order and a certain sorting to it. How do I get that? What's that list for my culture? The way you get to it in Windows Phone 8 is you use sorted locale grouping. You pass in whatever culture you want it for, and it returns just a big string list and say, this is how your jump list should be laid out. So once we have that sort of locale grouping, we call create default groups. All that does is go through each one of those items and puts it into a big empty list of lists. One thing to note is the key is dot, dot, dot. That's actually saying, no, don't use dot, dot, dot. Use a globe instead. If you jump list on your phone even now and look in the lower right-hand corner, there's a globe that usually means these are where all your international contacts go. And that globe is just a Unicode character defined up here. So you can grab that and use it in your apps if you're looking for that globe. So now that we have this empty list of lists, it has A through Z and a globe and a little hash mark for numbers, all we do is we loop through all of our items. We ask the sorted locale grouping, hey, I have a last name, it's Oster, which bucket should I put it in? It returns back and says, oh, you should go in index 12. That's where the O has been put. Not really, and I'm not sure what language I'm speaking where O is 12, but that's where it'll put it. And once it buckets everything correctly, I go through and I sort. I go through each group and I sort it. And that's how you end up with that sorted list. So that's the actual contact side. Now for the photo side, since we're short on time and long on code, instead of going through the, how do we convert that to a list box? We will just grab it. And I want to point out that really the only difference here is that we say layout mode is grid. That's all you have to do. And you can also say the cell size, which is 99 by 99. And it's as easy as that to get a grid view. The next step to do an infinitely scrolling list is there's a new event called item realized. Item realized is triggered whenever a data item is being rendered as a UI element. So the actual data you have, the object in the back, is now being connected up to some UI element. It doesn't mean it's on screen, but it means it's been pulled into the UI. So it's usually sitting probably off screen in a buffer waiting for you to flick and find it. The key here to get an infinite scrolling list is you watch the items as they're realized, as they're requested and they're bound to UI items. As soon as it's requested, you can say, hey, how close is the item that was just realized to the end? If it's really close to the end, you can go make another web service call and go grab more data. And you can end up with a nice infinite scrolling list. And that way, The user never has to feel it. They never have to hit a refresh button. They don't have to pull down to load more data. They can just keep scrolling. The code's already hooked up. Let's see if this works. I know how to fix that. Delete. All right, so now we're scrolling. And if you watch this bar here, watch me hit the end, and you see I now have a progress bar at the bottom. That's telling the end user, hey, I'm loading more data, and then it loads. And I can keep going. Oh, more data. And the reason it's even showing the progress bar is I built in a 2-second delay into my fake data service. So every time I go to realize the end item, I just put a sleep of two seconds in there, you know, from the old programmer's toolbox. You know, sleep fixes everything. So that's how you create infinite scrolling lists. The code will be out there. You guys can go check it out. It's really simple. It's much simpler than it used to be back in the Windows Phone 7 days. So those are three of the most common problems we saw with lists that people had to address, and three super easy workarounds. So remember, long list selector requires an ILIST of ILIST if you're going to do grouping. It does UI virtualization. That's why it can handle lists of like 10,000 items so easily. The key for infinite scrolling is item realized. And remember to set is grouping enabled, because if you don't, it's just going to look like a big black hole and you're going to get frustrated. And you won't have a fine group of people to help you out. Next up, maps. There's a whole session on maps, so I'm going to spend just a few seconds on this. But the map control has been rewritten from the ground up. The Bing map control has been deprecated. It's now, you can still use it. It's still published. There's still a Windows Phone 8 version, but we don't suggest you use it. The Nokia map is awesome. Nokia has to use that map control in their apps, so you better bet that they were sitting there in our inbox every day going, make this better, make this better, and we did. It supports off-thread input. It's super fluid. You have multiple layers. All those layers are animated on a separate thread. All the data is vector-based. So regardless of how big or small you render it, you can always read labels clearly. Details are clear. And of course, all the map data can be saved offline. And that offline data cache is shared between all applications, both first party and third. So if one application's already pulled down the France map set, your other application has access to it. Web browser control. The web browser control, there's a whole HTML session. I recommend seeing that if you're interested in it. It's IE10 based. The control supports all the features the browser does, namely local storage, all the CSS3 selectors and animations and features. There's first class gesture support built into it. And for your Windows Phone 7 apps, those will be running in an IE9 compatibility mode. There are not two browsers on the phone, there's only one, and it runs in IE9 mode when you have a Windows Phone 7 app. Pinch stretch. Yes, there's now pinch stretch support. We finally completed the gesture story. You can find it by looking in the manipulation delta event args, which comes off of manipulation delta. There'll be a pinch manipulation property. That gives you center points, first contact, second contact, everything you need to make truly an easy-to-use pinch stretch experience. For the control vendors, we have a new primitive, the viewport control. This is a more primitive control than even Scroll Viewer. There's no scroll bars. The only thing it really does is offer a viewport into a virtual surface. That's super important because it allows us to update bounds on the fly. If you've ever built a control that's built on Scroll Viewer, you try to insert items at the top. Say you have a Twitter client and you want new items to pull in from the top. You're going to end up messing up your scrolling, your scroll bars. It'll push content down. It's a big pain. So we actually created a new primitive called viewport control. This is actually what long list selectors built on top of. We didn't think it'd be very fair to make this awesome control and not let control vendors also be able to do the same thing. It's designed specifically for touch scenarios. And again, all the input there is off thread. Toolkit. Anyone here using the toolkit? Yes. Woo! For those that have, we've moved it over from silverlight.codeplex.com to phone.codeplex. It makes managing the two different toolkits much easier. It's been rebranded Windows Phone Toolkit, and we've added some new controls. All the controls are right to left aware. All the visuals have been updated to look like Windows Phone 8. So in the next 9 minutes, I'm going to go through a very complex control and pinch stretch. Just kidding. I'm not at all. But what I am going to do is that when you get your hands on the source code, is if you go over here to the controls folder, there's a control called Zoom Control. It shows how to use both pinch stretch and viewport control. It uses them together to create a really easy to use image zooming control. If you have an app out there that's an image viewer that shows a full screen image, please use this. I know any app that I ever pick up that shows me a full image, I go to pinch stretch and it doesn't, and it's frustrating. And I know why, because it's sort of a pain to write this yourself. We never had 100% true pinch stretch fidelity and the ability to grab that data. And also just figuring out all the math was confusing, and you don't want to stretch too big, and you want to clamp to certain dimensions. So this control is sitting in there and has the benefit of showing you how to use pinch stretch and viewport control. That moves us on to the core CLR. There's a whole session on CLR, so I'm not going to really go over it too much, but that gives you great new things like compile in the cloud, portable libraries, a bunch of great new APIs. Two things to go do homework on. If you haven't already checked out the async await keywords, please go do it. They make writing asynchronous code so much easier. Anyone that's seen the movie Inception, I feel like I'm in Inception when I have a Lambda that calls another Lambda that calls another Lambda as I'm processing all these callbacks. Anyone that's done OAuth, that right there is usually two or three chains, you know, down the rabbit hole trying to figure out, I have to make this call and make another call. So use async await. A CTP has been available for it, and it is available for it for Windows Phone 7, but it's now directly available to you in Core CLR. Another thing for people that do a lot of view model work, there's a new attribute called caller member name. Go mark up your property name in your iNotification change APIs. I can show it to you real fast. Code is worth 1,000 boring slides. The way to use it is almost every view model has something down here that looks like this, notify property change. You can make your life much simpler by just saying caller member name. You want to give it, it has to have a default value, so I say null. And now any place where the property change is going to be the exact same name, who here thinks this smells bad as a coder? We're passing a string that represents the method. Easy to change the method name and forget to change the actual string. Well, now, by marking it up with caller member name, you can do that. So much easier. Question right there.
When will we have a notifiable attribute so that we can just use automatic properties?
Oh, I dream of that all the time. We're working on it. We're working on making it even easier to do this, to make it notifiable. So those are two things to go definitely check out. This is where I go through the code, and I show you how to use async await and how easy it is to convert callback code. We have 6 minutes, and I really want to get some questions, at least a few. Oh, Windows Phone 7. A massive effort was made as we swapped out the entire kernel in the core CLR to make sure that the top apps continued to work perfectly, or if they didn't, we reached out to them and said, hey, there's something that you did that's a little strange. We didn't tell you not to, but we don't know why you did that. Or in a few cases, we're like, we're sorry, things have changed a little bit. And we had apps update themselves. So at launch, a majority of your apps, as many as possible, would continue to work exactly the same. As a reminder, tools can target both 7.1 and 8.0. I would definitely recommend you go see Stefan Wick's talk. He has a whole like 20 minutes he talks about this. He talks about LightUp, which is the concept of being able to use Windows Phone 8 features inside of your Windows Phone 7 app when it's running on a Windows Phone 8 phone. And he'll also talk about code sharing and good uses for that. But we have done a tremendous amount of work to try to make sure your Windows Phone 7 apps continue to work as is on Windows Phone 8. When you update the code, that's something to bear in mind, that we're running in what's called a Quirks mode. When it's a Windows Phone 7 app running on Windows Phone 8, we're going down a separate different code path. We're using a different text rendering stack. We have code that says, hey, when the app is Windows Phone 7, do this differently. Then when you upgrade your app to Windows Phone 8, we're going to go down the Windows Phone 8 code path, and you may see some behavior differences. So make sure you thoroughly test your app when you upgrade it to Windows Phone 8. It may not behave exactly the way you expect. Hopefully everyone saw all the new Windows Phone sessions that lit up once the once the Windows Phone keynote happened. This is us right here, the bolded talk. I definitely recommend to go see the Windows Phone 8 critical dev practices. That's led by Stefan Wick. Anyone that's seen it tends to have always great feedback on those talks. Another good one that I talked about was the HTML5 IE10 talk, if you're interested in that. All these are great talks. I mean, they're really feature-rich. I've seen them all. I saw them all in 10 minutes versus an hour, but they were all really good content. WP8 maps, location, and background. Again, if you're curious about the map control, all the great things you can do, great session. WP8 performance and optimization. Again, memory is the new battle you have to fight. You want to make sure you keep that down. Some great tips and tricks there. Again, all of these are great talks. I don't like any of these people. I don't go to them. Just kidding. These are all great talks. I couldn't just pick one. Resources. Go download the SDK on the Dev Center. The toolkit, if you're looking for some more controls, go grab that or any of our component vendors. And my blog is seanoster.com, pretty simple. And I'll update all the samples for this talk, and I'll just throw it up there, as long as a link to the video. Thank you, everyone, for putting up with this. And thank you for the buddy programming. It was super useful. So I'll be here for a few minutes for any questions.